Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second day for Doctors for COVID Ethics Gold Standard Symposium. We're going to start off this morning talking about something that came up a lot when we were covering both health and economics yesterday, and that is the propaganda matrix. And I'm delighted to be joined by a wonderful group of journalists and publishers, people, and one academic, people who know journalism and know communications. So let me just introduce you to our four panelists. First, we have, and I have to thank him, Brian, I have to thank you for UK Column's role in putting on this Gold Standard Symposium. We have Brian Garish, who after a successful career in the Royal Navy decided to do something about what was going on in the world. And the next thing he did was he discovered himself as a publisher in the media business. And then we have Taylor Hudak, who joined us last night as a moderator. Today, she's with us as a panelist, and she is one of those up-and-coming young journalists who's really doing amazing things on several websites, one in Munich and then the American, or it's the Last Vagabond, I believe. And Taylor has served doing communications for the Doctors of COVID Ethics and so has a very unique perspective. We're also joined by Professor Michael Meyer from the University of Munich. He says he's from academia, but I also know he has a little bit of journalist experience in his background, but he's going to bring a more, I would say, a higher-minded perspective. The rest of us are in the trenches. And then we have Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire, who also does a show with UK Column News and has a long and very distinguished career covering international politics, geopolitics, and I think has a very good sort of overview of the whole situation. Anyway, so ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm going to start off by asking each of you to make a 3.5 minute statement, and then we're going to have a bit of a response in a discussion. And Brian, again, special thanks to you for your role in making this symposium possible. So let's start off with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to speak. We're short of time, so I'm going to go very quickly. But I'm going to say that for the last 10 years in particular, we've been looking at something we think very dangerous unfolding in UK, and that's the use of applied behavioural psychology in order to get political agendas through. This has now culminated in the fact that we've had all of the chaos around the COVID-19 policy and the lockdown and the resulting so-called vaccination policy. That's all been happening, but we've kept our eye very much on what's been happening with applied behavioral psychology. Now, few people have used the term propaganda. They say that what we're seeing around the psychology is propaganda. That's true, but we've got to go deeper, and we've actually got to be considering that the British government, and this extends worldwide, but if I just focus on the UK at the moment, we're talking about the use of psychology on the wider public, but also on people in positions of authority. So within the local government councils in UK, within the police, within education, even the members of parliament themselves have been subjected to this very pernicious applied behavioural psychology. Now, the origins of this go back many, many years. We can go back to Tavistock, the Tavistock Institute, the Frankfurt School even. We can be looking into the 1930s, 1940s, but essentially the period where we began to see this on the rise, we're looking around about the year 2000, when we started to see people coming close to British government in order to advise them on how to use psychology to get political agendas through. And interestingly, the first department it affected was the Department for Environment and Rural Affairs. That was when we had another so-called pandemic of foot and mouth, 11 million animals very cruelly killed. But the behavioural insights team inside that department spread across government, became the behavioural insights team alongside the Cabinet Office in UK. And then what have we seen over recent years? We've seen the experts inside that BIT team, Behavioral Insights team, working with, amongst others, the French. And we particularly tracked a gentleman called Olivier Hulier, who was part of Sarkozy's inner circle. And there were a number of meetings set up where British and French experts met to join to discuss how they were going to get applied behavioral psychology working both in the UK and in France. Now, where does that take us? That takes us to the fact that we can now show, we can prove, there's no theory here, that the applied psychology has been brought directly into all matters to do with COVID and the vaccine. And the worst example I can give our audience today is the minutes from 22nd of March last year from the government scientific team called the SAGE team, in which they were discussing using fear, using stress and anxiety in order to get people in the UK to adhere more to the government's COVID-19 policies. So they were going to use fear, and they were also going to turn community members against each other in order to use the community relationships for people to police each other, either by encouragement or by criticism. So that is the situation as we speak in UK. Applied psychology, the public completely unaware of it, the British government boasting that it can change the way people think without them understanding what's happening. It even says in its 2010 document, Mindspace, people may know their behaviour is being changed, but they won't know how, or if they realise it's being changed, they still won't fully understand how it was done. This has now expanded across Europe, and the technology has been sold to the US and Australia. This is the danger, not just COVID and vaccination, but applied political psychology alongside it.
Thank you very much, Brian. Let's turn now to Professor Mine. Your perspective as someone looking at this from the academic and the research side from the university.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here. I'm especially delighted with the title of this panel. Propaganda Matrix is the title of my new book published last week. So it's the right place to be. For today, I have just 2 points. First, why did state and commercial media define the reality of the pandemic and not alternative media? And second, why do we not have any force as state journalism beyond independent platforms like UK Column? Why did journalists follow governments using applied psychology? This was Brian's point right now. My first point, the media reality of the pandemic. The traditional media, BBC, for example, are the memory of society, the shared background knowledge. Alternative media like UK Column are not part of this knowledge. Even this conference will not become part of it. That means nobody has to care what we talk about here as long as we not reach the level of key media like BBC of the traditional media. Using key media, people observe power relations. Who has the power to define reality? Who has the power to shape society's knowledge? So people don't have to believe in key media reality. It's enough to believe in key media effects. In my academic discipline in communication, we talk about influence of presumed influence, influence of presumed influence. This concept has 3 pillars. First, people know that everybody else knows about media reality, the knowledge of society. Second, people believe in media effects. And third, because of 1 and 2, people adapt to key media's reality. That's what we could observe in the Corona crisis. In Germany, we had and we have a very uniform reporting in the key media. It's all about the killer virus story. Some critics say we would have no pandemic without the tests. I say we would have no pandemic with key media journalists doing their job. The job of journalism is not to promote government policy, quite the opposite. Why did journalism fail? My second point, I think it's all about dependencies, about economic and political dependencies. He media are among the winners of the pandemic. First, they got new financial resources, state subsidies in Germany, state ads, lots of ads. Second, the audience came back. In an age of fear and anxiety, people seek safety in official rules, in official knowledge, in official news. And last but not least, the governments helped to fight challengers, especially alternative media, blocking channels, deleting videos, freezing bank accounts, observing free and independent journalists via the Secret Service. Those in power started a kind of cyber war in order to suppress all non-hegemonic information. And in this war, key media are a very powerful ally. The lesson that we have to learn, this is my final sentence, is quite simple. We need media without commercial and political dependencies, non-profit organizations with transparency, with social monitoring, with a different media ethics. It's a long way, of course, and I think we have to start the public debate on media ownership rather today than tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a book I'm ordering. Patrick?
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. Just to follow on from what my other panel colleagues said, I'd like to comment on the coordinated fashion of the propaganda that we're witnessing. It's coordinated globally. The streamlining of the messaging, even the policy itself, the attacks against dissenters, the fact checkers that have been deployed, the deplatforming by Silicon Valley, by big tech. This is like a war effort, and it's in its global context, this is totally unprecedented in history, even to the point now where the media is working with government institutions to effectively single out and marginalize, quote, anti-vaxxers as a kind of crude pejorative term in particularly vicious fashion. So what started off as ostensibly a sales and marketing campaign for the transnational pharmaceutical industry, or cartel, if you will, has accelerated into something much more pernicious. And, you know, accusing the quote unvaccinated as being akin to murderers, as the US President Joe Biden had recently said and commented, or California Governor Gavin Newsom comparing the unvaccinated to drunk drivers as a public health hazard. So this is the sort of hyperbolic language that's being effectively weaponized through propaganda from the government media complex. I say government media complex because these two institutions are working hand in glove and across borders now. And they've effectively polarized society in recent months, and at worst, segregating a minority in a manner reminiscent of some of the worst periods of recent history, particularly mid-20th century Germany, as an example, or in a sectarian country as extreme sectarian or tribal divides. So throughout this shameful saga, the mainstream media has been an enabler and has shown little restraint in attacking those who are considered dissident to government policy. So by combining forces directly between government and the press, the fourth estate has effectively become a fifth column, which is being weaponized against the people themselves. And if you want to look at the actual data of this, it's very clear now. The drop in advertising just in the UK alone during the first lockdown, something like a loss of £1.1 billion in advertising spend across all the major industries. And that was really picked up by the government itself, who then became the biggest advertiser, as Michael has commented previously, during that period, almost 50% more than the next biggest corporate spender, which was Unilever. Corporation. Wow. And so in addition to this, this was effectively propaganda campaigns paid for by the government, subsidizing all of the mainstream media, mainstream corporate media outlets. And the government struck a 119 million pound deal for COVID advertising weeks before the first lockdown. That's according to the UK's Daily Telegraph newspaper. That was reported in October of 2020. So there was an advanced plan, if you will, to roll out this propaganda, which, as Brian Gerrish previously commented, is predicated on weaponized applied behavioral psychology. So UK government pandemic advertising in 2020 alone, it tops a quarter of a billion pounds. So this is not, these are not trivial sums of money. And some of the worst type of propaganda you've ever seen, very manipulative, definitely attacking the disposition of members of the public, coordinated across every outlet in terms of messaging. You can just look at a few examples, pick out any day of the year, and you'll see completely a streamlined messaging across all media outlets. So the public has never had to face anything like this in history, not in the West anyway. And to top it off, if you want to look at the civil society sector, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, up to June 2020, had plowed something like $250 million in foundation grants into mainstream media outlets like the BBC, NBC, Al Jazeera, ProPublica, The Guardian, Univision, Financial Times, The Atlantic, just to name only a few. So this adds another feature to the propaganda rollout, the complete coordination. And this is the same Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that is subsidizing the R&D for the vaccine development and has marshaled one particular project. I believe that's the Oxford vaccine or the AstraZeneca vaccine, but is subsidizing effectively global manufacturing. So there is a conflict of interest there on a level that is even incomprehensible. And just to round this off, this crisis is being articulated in a national security context more and more now. We hear the rhetoric. So it's worth pointing out that the G7 nations in June of 2018 had initiated what is called the Rapid Response Mechanism, the RRM. And this is an agreement between all G7 nations that they will be of single mind, that they will be of single messaging in any particular crisis, that there will be no variations from their agreed narrative. This is the Rapid Response Mechanism. This was initiated by then Prime Minister Theresa May, and this is covering the G7 nations. This is initially said to counter Russian disinformation at the time, or enemy disinformation or propaganda. But now we can see that this is exactly what has happened throughout the duration of the COVID crisis. So that brings it into a geopolitical context to show the level of coordination is unprecedented, and it's a global in that respect.
Patrick, thank you. They always say follow the money. What we heard yesterday, again, was this notion of plans being made well before the beginning of the pandemic and in many different fields. So it raises serious questions about the propaganda matrix. So now, Taylor, we turn to you. Take it away.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Now, it is, of course, the role of the media to hold power to account and to hold the establishment to account. And unfortunately, what we are seeing here with this COVID-19 crisis is that the media, in particular the mainstream media, is doing the groundwork and the PR for the pharmaceutical industry, as well as the corrupt public health industry. And what I find extremely problematic here is that, as we all know, sitting here on this panel, it is our job as media professionals to basically inform the public, and our duty is to the public. Instead, our associates, I guess, in the mainstream media are encouraging people to make an irreversible health decision, and they're only providing them certain types of information in one side of the story here. And so that's why it is so important that independent media really plays a strong role in uplifting the voices of the doctors who are part of, say, Doctors for COVID Ethics and those who are speaking out. And I'll get to that in just a little bit here. But we know that the propaganda is unfortunately quite effective. One thing to remember is that just a year and a half ago, we did not know the terms PCR test or flatten the curve or social distancing. So we see these public health terms and phrases being used in everyday vernacular, again, pointing to how strong this propaganda is. And of course, the media has been instilling fear in the public, and the media propaganda has also caused people to become fearful of one another and to also police each other. This is very problematic, as it is very reminiscent of what we have seen in the past with totalitarian regimes. And also, too, it creates a social hierarchy. As Patrick Henningsen was saying, the mainstream media is demonizing unvaccinated people, blaming the so-called surge in COVID cases and hospitalizations on unvaccinated people. And essentially, those who are vaccinated are becoming fearful of those who choose not to get the jab. So we're seeing this division, and it's important to also remember that the establishment benefits from our division. And again, I want to also emphasize the importance of the doctors who we have really relied on here to provide us with the facts and the science and the truth when it comes to COVID-19, the vaccines, and this particular virus, because many of them are demonized in the media. And it reminds me of many of the whistleblowers who speak out. John Kiriakou spoke out against the CIA and so many others. And what happens to them is that they are demonized, they are smeared, and it comes to a great risk to not only their careers and their personal lives to speak out and provide us with the truth. So I do want to thank the doctors and medical professionals associated with Doctors for COVID Ethics. It's been my pleasure to work alongside all of you. And I could tell you that each week, each of these doctors are risking so much, again, to provide us with the truth and the facts here. And again, it's been my pleasure to be a part of this. And I just would encourage everybody that independent media is the future. So that's the positive here. More and more people are turning away from the mainstream media. The viewership has declined quite significantly over the past 10 years, and specifically within the past 5 years. People are also turning to social media to receive their news, which does somewhat tie into independent media. But again, it goes back to the funding model. Independent media is funded by viewers, while the establishment media, mainstream media, is funded by the very people that they are meant to hold to account. So I think that the future can look bright if we put more of a focus on independent media, and also, more importantly, uplift the voices of the brave men and women in the medical profession who have spoken out against this medical tyranny.
So that leads right into my first question, and I'm going to throw this out for response. Raise your hand if you want to go, and I'll acknowledge you. So Professor Mayen said that the I forget your exact words, but that our reality matrix is being created by the propaganda matrix, not by independent media. So if independent media is going to get back in the game, what is it we can do to better serve our audience and help them transform away from the situation and the tyranny that is threatening all of us? Anyone want to take that? Patrick?
I'll have a stab at that. Yes, Catherine, that's a really difficult question. You know, one of the big fundamental problems with the current situation in terms of social media platforms dominating and hoovering up a large percentage of the online traffic is while the mainstream media, while governments are seem to be rooting out this scourge of disinformation, as they call it, or misinformation, as YouTube and Google often refer to it, or Facebook, there is a lot of misinformation that is circulating, even in alternative media and on social media as well, to just to add a little more complication to the mix. So within the independent media, there's that problem that people have to contend with as well. But I think people are viewers are more discerning than ever, and this crisis has forced a lot of people, and in many ways has raised the standard of analysis. A recent MIT report, where they sent undercover researchers into the quote alternative media found that there's a higher standard of data integrity and following the facts within the quote skeptics community, as they said, as opposed to what they would call the mainstream audiences. So that's definitely a positive development. So in many ways, people are being forced to be more discerning and to raise their game. So that to me is very promising, and it only means that things are going to open up more and more in the independent sphere, and more quality content hopefully is going to move into that space as well.
Brian?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to just come back to a fundamental. So Patrick earlier on mentioned the term war. We are at war at the moment. We're being attacked. We're being attacked by our own government. The government's using propaganda. What is that doing? Well, it's putting across messages which are skewed. They are untrue. They're emotive in a way that's designed to get people to react in a particular way. And the key thing that we have to do, I would say, as the new media, let's leave alternate media, let's call ourselves new media. What we've got to do is fully understand what we're fighting. You can't fight what you can't see. You can't fight what you don't understand. So we have to be very certain that when we look out the window, we can see who the enemy is and what the enemy is doing. And the reason that I've come in so strongly on the applied behavioral psychology is propaganda, if it's normal propaganda, can be seen and deduced by people quite easily. So within the communist bloc, people just knew that what they were going to read in the papers or what they were going to hear on the radio, maybe later on the TV, was propaganda. They automatically expected propaganda through those channels because they were government controlled. But we've now got the situation where we're supposedly in Western democracies. I don't think we're in a democracy anymore. I think we're in a dictatorship, but many people think they're still in a democracy. And therefore, when information comes in, they believe that information, they take it at face value. Now, the public's being subjected to propaganda, but they're also being subjected to very, very sophisticated linguistic techniques. This is the applied psychology. So the message, for example, is not only drilled into their minds by virtue of repetition, an example, the BBC giving us supposedly the news on the hour every hour, but also we are now seeing that the messages themselves, whether they're delivered in person, so their video and audio, or their written word, they've been constructed with the help of psychological techniques to get the message into our subconscious mind. And we are now in a situation where we're living in societies, whether it's in UK or in Europe or in the States, where people are literally mesmerized. They can't think. They don't know how to think.
Brian? I've got one more minute, so I want to give the professor a chance to just, can you wrap up?
Well, so we need to understand what we're fighting, and we need to understand this applied behavioral psychology. If we don't understand it, we can't fight it.
Absolutely. Okay, Professor, it looks like you're going to wrap us up. You've got the last minute in the floor. What can you tell us?
If Brian and Patrick are right that we are at war, and there's no doubt that they are right, then we have to combine our powers. The state media business complex is very international, very well connected across borders. Patrick mentioned G7. There are a lot more of arenas where the state media business complex has meetings. Today is the first time that I use UK column. I don't know anything about French new media, about Greece new media, Spanish new media. So I think we have to learn about new media in other countries, and we have to go together. Otherwise, we couldn't win this war because the others are so powerful, so strong.
So it sounds to me like we have an incredible opportunity and an important opportunity. So let's go do that while we turn our screen over to the next group. Ladies and gentlemen, you're doing great things. I'm proud to be associated with you. And again, Brian, Thank you to UK Column for sponsoring this symposium. Ladies and gentlemen, on to the next show.